Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yoannis had a pretty good night last night.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Monday to you, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. This is an exciting hour here on the DA Show. Coming up in 20 minutes, we've got your best audio of the day in Soundcheck. That's going to be a lot of fun because that includes Susan Waldman singing the national anthem. Yes. We also have a national broadcaster giving Taylor Mraz a shout out. And then in 40 minutes, it's the first ever episode of Canadian Bacon. Mraz will anchor our morning highlight reel of what happened in the Stanley Cup playoffs as our Don Cherry a la mode. Your best goal of the day, your best game of the day, and your best soundbite of the day in the NHL. They're playing their bubble in Toronto at Edmonton, so we go north of the border and sniff some sizzling Canadian bacon. Coming up in 40 minutes. Boy, was this the tale of two sluggers of the same city. And it was so stark and so jarring just how different their lives and their careers and their existences are. On the one hand, last night, you had Aaron Judge, slugger extraordinaire for the New York Yankees, pounding yet another home run.
Aaron Judge.
In fact, he hit two. And when Aaron Judge hits monster towering home runs into empty left field seats at Yankee Stadium, and it rattles around like a Plinko chip, you just sit there and go, holy moly. And not only is Judge crushing home runs, but the Yankees are winning. They're ripping off W's. They're feeling good and doing well. And Aaron Judge's career, he's already the star of the Yankees, but it also feels like he's just getting started. It feels like he's just arrived, even though he's been around for a couple of seasons now. But it feels like we have got a good long time of Aaron Judge developing into the next great Yankee. It just feels already preordained that you are going to have Aaron Judge for the next 10 to 12 years as the centerpiece, as the superstar of the Yankees. He is phenomenal. He is absolutely phenomenal. And I give him a lot of credit because you could understand if timing would be off right now for hitters. Remember, he was coming off of a spring training injury, and instead he's totally locked in. And his home runs are not just like dinking it over the fence. He is towering shots into the outfield, and it is awesome to watch. Awesome. So here is centerpiece young slugger of the Yankees, and the Yankees are tearing off wins, and things are ascending for Aaron Judge. He's going to be the toast of New York for a long time. And on the same day that Aaron Judge hits yet another home run, in fact, two of them, and yet another Yankees win, on the flip side of town, the Mets slugger, Yoenis Cespedes, is just a disaster. In every way, shape, and form, this guy's a disaster, and the Mets are a disaster.
Yoenis.
The Mets lose again. Ho-hum, yawn, of course, because of course, they just stink. And Yoenis Cespedes just doesn't show up to the game yesterday. Just doesn't show up. Team doesn't know where he is. So the team issues an alert during the game. We don't know where Yoenis Cespedes is. Well, this is a little scary. People start freaking out. Is he safe? Is he kidnapped? What happened? Is he missing? Is he lost? What is going on? And so now in the middle of a Mets game, people are wondering, is this professional baseball player okay? Is he safe? Now, I have to be honest. Maybe this is because I've got a healthy dose of cynicism as a Mets fan. Maybe because I've watched Yoenis Cespedes' 4 years under this contract. Maybe it's just because things on social media always feel worse than they are. But once I saw this, I'm like, yeah, I'm not worried that Yoenis Cespedes is suddenly kidnapped by like Venezuelan kidnappers and held for ransom right now, okay? I think because it's Yoenis Cespedes, he's doing fine. It's just this is Yo being Yo. Remember there was Manny being Manny? This is Yo being Yo. And by the end of the game, we realize that the Mets, interestingly, put out a statement that we don't know where he is, but we believe he's safe. We have reason to believe he's safe. And I'm like, okay, we're already going down the road of Cespedes is just, he's just being a lunkhead. So by the time the game is over, we have news that Yoenis Cespedes has opted out because of COVID. Okay, now this is interesting because, well, we can all agree on a consensus. This is not a hot take. This is the one thing we can all agree on these days. If a player opts out due to COVID-related reasons, nobody's going to give him bleep for it. Nobody's going to give him heat for it. Hey, you don't feel safe? Totally get it. You've got a family member or yourself or whatever. Nobody's arguing with those guys. But of course, it's not just about that with Yoenis Cespedes, because if you were opting out for COVID-related reasons, you could still call your team. You could definitely call your GM. Or you could have your agent call your GM. Or you could have your agent call your manager, or you could text your manager, or you could email your manager, or you could email the GM, or you could really do one of any billion of ways we communicate these days to just let them know, hey, I'm not going to be at the ballpark today. I don't feel comfortable reporting, and I'm stepping away from the game. But of course, Yoenis Cespedes didn't do any of that. Of course, he just up and left and took all of his luggage. The Mets arrived at his hotel room, and he was just not there. His stuff wasn't there. He wasn't there. I mean, come on. This is not COVID, because you could just tell somebody what you're doing. So then the real story came out, which was Yoenis Cespedes has been arguing with the front office already. They've only played 10 games. He's not played in two of them. So in the course of 8 days, he's fought with the team twice. Okay? Now, this is way better than his normal batting average. Once every 4 days, he's fighting with the team. This is pretty good. Pretty good success rate. Pretty good hit rate. And he's fighting with the team because he's not playing enough to reach his incentives. And of course, his contract has to be incentive-laden because he missed all of last year and basically all of the year before because he stepped in a hole being chased by a wild boar. Okay? So this is why there has to be incentives. I know it feels like just another Mets thing. And of course, there is just another Mets thing all of the time. But in this case, I really don't know how you blame anybody but Yoenis Cespedes. Yoenis Cespedes was given tons of money to hit home runs. And the one thing that he didn't do was hit home runs or even play baseball. Because he had a myriad of injuries, shut himself down, didn't want to play, and then got chased by a wild boar, I guess, and broke his heels and then couldn't play again. And then finally coming back this year, the Mets are like, well, we can't just pay you all of your guaranteed money, so it's got to be incentive-based because, you know, you don't play baseball anymore. And we don't know if you're ever motivated anymore. And the last time we saw you playing baseball, you were chain smoking in the dugout. So you know what? I mean, forgive us for not believing that you're going to be playing much baseball these days. And then he gets upset over that because he's stinking up the joint. He had a home run on opening day and then since has been awful. And they're not playing him because, you know what, he's not really a valuable member of that lineup right now. They got to change things up because they stink again. Oh no, we stink again. And of course he's mad, and of course he just ups and leaves, and of course he doesn't tell anybody, and of course he just takes his stuff out of his hotel room, and of course they have to wonder whether he got kidnapped or not. I mean, this is just the most Yoenis Cespedes thing ever. And in 2016, when his contract is up, it's hard to blame the Mets for giving him money because they had just come off going to the flipping World Series because of him. Yes, they had Matt Harvey, and yes, they had Noah Syndergaard, and yes, they had the heartwarming story of David Wright, and it all came together, and Wilmer Flores crying, and all of this thing felt great and wonderful and new to Mets fans yet again. And I'm telling you, it was one of the best faultless of my life watching the Mets do that and go all the way to the World Series. And yet, here was the looming contract decision of Yoenis Cespedes, who was always flighty and always unpredictable, and a guy that nobody really knew how much you could trust, but he just mashed the cover off the baseball for 3 months after the trade, and he basically single-handedly pushed them into the playoffs, and then once he got to the playoffs, kept mashing, and then suddenly his contract is up, and you go, okay, we don't really trust that he's going to do this for 4 years, but what do? We don't have another home run hitter in the middle of the lineup, and are we going to let a guy that just single-handedly dragged us to the playoffs and hit against all pitching in crucial spots, in big moments, in big games, in the playoffs and everything, or are we going to just let that guy walk? Because we don't have to trade anybody for him now. We've already traded the pieces for him. We've just got to cut a check, and we have a check because we are a New York-based team, even though the Madoffs have hamstrung us. We do have money to spend. Are you not going to spend that money? And they spend the money, and of course, he's a debacle. And of course, instead of being motivated because he's suddenly the toast of the town and he can own New York and the team just went to the World Series, and instead of taking advantage, of course, he gets injured, he shuts himself down, he's chain smoking, and he's getting chased by wild boars. Of course. Because of course. And so I really don't feel like this is anybody's fault. But Yoenis Cespedes, I mean, if the Mets were a winning ball club and they had more structure and they had a better accountability, I mean, yeah, maybe he's not as much of a disaster. But the guy's been a disaster his entire life, whether it was with the Mets or not. And in this case, what a mess that he just leaves behind. I mean, Yoenis Cespedes, with a good 60 games this year, could have set himself up for another contract next year. Who knows how big it was going to be? But what, he's 34 years old and we don't even know if he's really that old. So, you know, he could have set himself up, but instead now, Jeff Pass of ESPN was asked, you know, what do you think about Yoenis Cespedes? Why did he bail out? And he says, I just think he just wasn't into it. And which is just the most Yoenis Cespedes thing. Like, yeah, he's just not that into it these days. It's like the girl that's just not that into you. You don't know why. She's just like, eh, not that into you. And so could he come back? Well, I mean, he can hit prodigious home runs when I guess he wants to, and he's not getting chased by a wild boar. His heels are broken. But, you know what? Maybe somebody gives him a minor league deal next year. But that's where we're at with Cespedes. Like, this was an exciting, great, clutch home run hitter. And now he's just going to be toiling around trying to get a minor league deal and a tryout in spring training because he just doesn't care anymore. Like, that's just on him. And it's just yo being yo. And what a crash and burn for two members of that World Series Mets team. Matt Harvey and Yoenis Cespedes were the toast of the town in October 2015 and could do no wrong. And spin forward 5 years later, and they're basically both out of baseball. I mean, my God. And Mraz, I think you knew as well yesterday when the reports came down that Cespedes might be missing and then it might be COVID-related, it all smelled like, yeah, right, it's Cespedes.
I have to be honest, when it first came down, though, and he was missing, if you were to ask me any Met player goes missing and isn't answering, it would have been Cespedes. But there was a part of me that thought, how are we playing this game right now if the team has acknowledged that this guy is missing? Because I immediately went to worst case. I started thinking about the Daryl Kyle situation and everything, like what really could be going on. And then I felt kind of stupid within 15 minutes because you realize it's Yoenis Cespedes. And when the end, when he opts out for COVID reasons, and then you see everything come out about his incentives, you just roll your eyes and go, really, dude? Really? When everybody really is opting out for real situations, we're going to hide behind the COVID situation because you haven't reached your incentives and you're not playing because the Mets stink and you stink and you've lost. The Mets had like four heartbreaking losses in a row before he decides to empty out his hotel room. And it's just the ultimate chump move. In a season where you are allowed to opt out for real reasons, to use that when it's so evident now that he really doesn't have COVID concerns. It's so evident that I really actually find that part kind of disgusting. But he also now is behind this shield of you're not supposed to question a guy who opts out for COVID. But it's yo being yo, and it's an absolute disaster. And good riddance. Absolutely good riddance. And what is really puzzling to me, DA, more than anything, this is a guy who comes from Cuba, where we've seen how many of these baseball players come from Cuba, and it's like they're everything, right? They cannot wait to get to America to play Major League Baseball, to escape the situations they were in, and to just have that true love of the game. And then this guy makes millions and millions and millions upon a contract, and then he just doesn't give a damn. I mean, you would never see this happen with El Duque or Levon Hernandez. Go down the list. I mean, what the heck is wrong with Yoenis Cespedes? It's just the ultimate goofball disaster.
He's such a chump. He's such a chump because this has been his entire career with the Mets. It's like he got traded in the middle of a pennant race, and because it was important and because he felt important, he suddenly tried, and he was ridiculous. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. You know, then the moment that he didn't feel important or the games were important and he was getting all of the money, he was like, yeah, you know what? Not interested, shutting it down and just making a host of reasons why he didn't want to play. And he is one of the most tantalizing talents that have come through Major League Baseball over the last 10 or 15 years that might have accomplished 20% of his potential, because his potential is exactly what the stretch run was in 2015. Those 2 months, that's what he could be. He really could have always been that. And yet, he never was interested enough to keep putting it all together. When we come back here on the show, your best audio of the day. And that includes a shout out for young Taylor Mraz from a national broadcaster. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
And remember, you can watch the DA show at watchda.com every single day inside the radio.com app or on our Twitch channel. Yes, go to Twitch and search CBS Sports Radio. We begin with Patriots defensive back Devin McCourty, who is upset that the NFL has moved up the deadline to decide whether you want to opt out of this upcoming season.
I think it's an absolute joke that the NFL is changing the opt-out period, mainly because they don't want to continue to see guys opt out. I'm sure they're shocked about how many guys have opted out. But it's the same thing when we sign a CBA. Sometimes some of those things that we think are good sometimes backfire. You know, we have rookies who are locked in long-term contracts and tagged. You guys don't think we would love to change that about the CBA, but we can't. That's the point of signing an agreement. So I think it's terrible. I think it's BS that the league has changed that date.
Yeah, I think it's a bad look for the NFL. I can understand Devin McCourty's frustration here because, you know, a lot of players are dealing with a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties, and you know, giving them time to decide where they feel comfortable. It's a moment in time where this is not going to happen ever again. So if you're the NFL, being understanding to your players, I think, is the best PR tact as well. And you're asking players to engage in this process and engage in playing because, of course, you need the players to play. But you also realize, you know, if Devin McCourty doesn't play football, it's not like people stop watching football. So the players, yes, there are star players that everybody wants to see. If you saw Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady all say we're not playing, that puts a big ding in the interest level. But a lot of the guys opting out, people are going to watch football anyway, no matter what, if there is a football season. So I think both sides have to understand. But if you're the NFL, making it seem like you're forcing the hand of the players to make a decision right now is not a great look for you. Susan Waldman helps broadcast Yankees games on radio. She is part of our favorite broadcasters in baseball. Not because they call a great game, but because they're so damn entertaining. John Sterling and Susan Waldman. Here is Susan, who actually got the gig to sing the national anthem before Friday's Yankees and Red Sox game.
On the Rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, they move through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled flag
because Susan has such a screechy voice on the radio calling Yankees games, I assumed it was going to be a rough listen. Much better than I thought. Much, much, much better than I thought. Mraz, I thought it was a good rendition. Maybe not an all-time classic, but it's a good national anthem rendition. I give Susan Waldman credit.
Yeah, and a lot of people didn't notice, and I didn't notice for a long time, that she was a Broadway singer before getting into broadcasting, and I believe sang the national anthem for Game 7 of the 1986 ALCS. That's how long she's been singing national anthems. She apparently made a deal with Gerrit Cole years ago. If he was ever a Yankee, she would sing the national anthem as home opener, which is just, of course, Susan Waldman. But there was... DA, I kid you not, Friday, I am mowing the lawn, I'm doing everything, and I knew she was going to be singing this national anthem. I said, whatever I do, I have to be in front of my TV at 6:50 because I have to hear how this goes. And I was blown away for listening to Susan do all these games and her voice all these years. I thought that rocked. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, because when you hear her do Yankee games, you also wouldn't assume that she's been classically trained as a Broadway star.
Right.
Does not.
It's like the ultimate Forrest Gump moment. Like, wait, what?
That's like if we would have found out you actually did attend Duke. Wait a second. Mraz actually did go to Duke? And finally, here is Ian Eagle. Yes, the voice of the NBA on TNT. One of the voices and the voice of the YES Network and Brooklyn Nets games. The Brooklyn Nets do something that's called Where You're Brooklyn. Or Where's Brooklyn At? And in this case, WEAR... they show fans who send in pictures dressed up in gear, dressed up in Brooklyn Nets gear. So he does the Where Brooklyn At segment, and guess who makes an appearance? Let's play the clip.
It is time for another young Nets fan edition, yes, of Where Brooklyn At. Say hello to Taylor Elizabeth Marash from Bayshore, Long Island, 7 months old. Her dad, Sean, has been a Nets fan since 1987. He works for CBS Sports Radio. Sean is a great dude. Her mom, Danielle, loves when Sean and Taylor watch the Nets games together. Thank you. to the Marash family.
Taylor's
what a beauty.
Gorgeous.
Wow. Ian called you a great dude.
How about that? How about that? Now, I do have to be honest. The moment this appeared on TV, I was totally bracing myself for the attack of you and Bogus telling me that this was such a Schwartz move that my kid ended up on a Nets broadcast like it's an XFL catalog.
You jumped me on it. I was going to give you credit here for first, Ian Eagle calling you a great dude and clearly biting his tongue. My second point was going to be that is the most Schwartzian move of all time. And I have to say, Taylor is adorable. I love her to pieces. Got to hang out with her a couple weeks ago. I just loved my time. My wife loved her time with Taylor. We just love Taylor. But you are really becoming Schwartz with Taylor. You post pictures incessantly with her. I mean, it's everything with her constantly. And now, how dare you force her into the Nets broadcast? How dare you? And if it was just Taylor Marash and she's a big Nets fan, that'd be one thing. But you clearly made it obvious that it was you from CBS Sports Radio hoping that that would help you get her on TV, which is the Schwartz move. It's not just that he wants attention for his kids. It's that he tries to use his leverage in the media to draw attention. And that's exactly what you did.
No, I'm going to clear myself of all charges here. Here's the truth. You could look at my Instagram. That picture is from like the beginning of June. She was in her Nets shirt, and all I did was post a simple, "Daddy, when does sports come back?" And I did the Nets fan hashtag, "Where Brooklyn at?" Not even knowing at the time Nets would even be on Yes Network again this year, thinking they would all be national TV games. And then, by happenstance, earlier last week, the Nets on Yes Instagram account commented on my picture of that and said, "We'd love to use this. Can you email us?" So I emailed them, and they asked for the background. "Oh, where do you work? This, that, the other thing." And then they used it. I didn't fish for them. I didn't go for them. They came to me, DA. They came to me. This isn't me pitching them to a catalog. They came to me.
I don't think the jury think that holds up because you're right now the evidence is overwhelming. For 7 months, you have posted everything with Taylor on social media. You have gone Schwartzo. You're on that spectrum now.
Look.
Budget Schwartz. You chummed the waters with the hashtag. You didn't have to use the hashtag in June when you didn't know there were going to be NBA games again, but you did just in case somebody saw it.
Yeah.
No, this is not a low budget Schwartz. I never knew they'd use it. I didn't even care if they used it. My wife didn't even want them using it because she wasn't wearing a headband. And also, my wife was furious after
headband,
the broadcast.
Goes, she was right.
My wife goes afterwards, goes, "By the way, when on earth did I ever say I enjoy when you and Taylor watch the Nick games together?"
Sean is a great dude.
Yeah, AB just hit it on the head. That's a low-rent Schwartz move. That's a low-budget Schwartz move. You know, Schwartz is the Hollywood blockbuster, and right now you're the indie film, but it's still in the Schwartz production realm.
Oh, I'm cleared. I'm clear. They came to me.
It's not like they pick up the phone and called you. "Hey, can we get Taylor on?"
You used the hashtag. You knew it could come back to potentially getting her on TV. And once they said, "Can we use it?" you were like, "Oh, let me make time for this." And then
now,
were you DVRing that game in case they went to it so that you had the audio as well to send to all of your family? Did you take a video on your phone and tweet and send it to all your fam?
Well, this is where I'm guilty. You know what? Now I feel pressured to clear you. I DVR'd Friday's game knowing that they had asked me for all of this, and it was not on Friday's game. So rather than let it go, I emailed them Friday night.
Oh,
hey,
that's gross.
And they emailed me back Saturday and said, "Set your DVR. It'll be on Sunday's telecast." So I could have let it go, but I said, "Hey, wait a minute. I look like an idiot here because you made it seem like you're going to be on. It wasn't on Friday." So there you go. That's the Schwartz move.
And did you push it on social media?
No, I didn't. Well, afterwards. I didn't push "You Gotta Watch the Net Game" for it because I didn't want it blown up in my face in case they didn't use it.
Yeah.
But after it was on, I went back and I filmed it. I put it up, and the family, of course, loved it and everything like that. And I did feel a little dirty knowing that I should have just let it play out and see if it appeared on Sunday. Then I feel pressure them after the scene wasn't on Friday.
You emailed them. You are one step away from asking them for a free basketball. You know that.
I need a bath after all that.
No, and it's funny, too, because watching yesterday, they're doing this thing where they stopped having all their giveaways throughout the year because they had less home dates. Then there was this thing, if you're watching from home, you could be one of the first 100 people to submit for a Caris LeVert t-shirt. And I caught myself going to my computer to submit for it, and I said, no, wait a minute. Now it's too much.
Sean is a great dude.
Oh, he did admit, DA, on the show Friday that he laid out in depth that he worked at FAN. Ian's been on the show. So, like, I mean, he gave them all of the details to grease the skids to get Taylor into this broadcast. I mean, I even wonder if they saved it for Sunday because Ian didn't do the game on Friday afternoon. Ruco did. So I wonder if they kept it for Ian on Sunday because Sean had told them how tight he and Ian were.
Wow.
I didn't say how tight we were. That's not what
low
I said.
Budget shorts.
Yo,
low
so I don't
budget
have bar.
Shorts. Wow. Whew. Boy, this does change a lot, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It really takes the ability for Mraz to crush Schwartz now out of his wheelhouse. I mean,
maybe we have to leave this for the poll question or something today to see if the listeners agree that I'm cleared of all charges here.
Oh, you're very much guilty of many charges here. Grand theft Schwartzery. AB has our headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, what do we have?
DA, these ones are sponsored by the PGA. Don't miss the first major of 2020, the PGA Championship, August 6th to the 9th at TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Tune in on ESPN, CBS, Westwood One, or SiriusXM.
You're so funny.
The Houston Rockets tied an NBA record with 61 three-point attempts in regulation last night. They hit 21 of them, but causing 22 turnovers is how they beat the Bucks 120-116 at Disney World. Milwaukee would have clinched number one in the East with a victory. The Mavs lost to the Suns 117-115, but clinched a playoff spot when Memphis fell to San Antonio earlier yesterday 116-108, and the Magic dumped the Kings 132-116, but they lose forward Jonathan Isaac to a torn left ACL. Now, Isaac hyperextended that knee back on New Year's Day. Might not have played again this season had it gone through its normal course, but the shutdown gave him the chance to get back on the floor, and here he is now re-injuring and more significantly injuring that knee. The Dodgers had Clayton Kershaw back on the mound yesterday. His delayed season debut, thanks to that back stiffness, came in Arizona. 5 2/3, 82 pitches, no runs, 3 hits, and 6 Ks.
First time pitching in, golly, 8-9 months, and so of a game that actually matters. So I think there was some, like, relief and some thankfulness for sure. Just grateful to get to be back out there again.
His Dodgers won the game 3-0. The Yankees outscored the Red Sox 9-7. Aaron Judge, 2 homers, 5 RBI. His second long ball broke a tie in the 8th. It's a 3-game sweep and a 6-game win streak overall for a team that so desperately needs some success. As we discussed earlier this hour, Mets DH Yoenis Cespedes technically not playing again this season because of COVID concerns, but Yo's reportedly angry about playing time. He had a second conversation with the team about this on Saturday, then didn't show up without explanation for yesterday's 4-0 loss in Atlanta. And the Angels sent Shohei Ohtani for an MRI yesterday after complaining about arm discomfort after another lackluster start. This one against the Astros, he got just 5 outs. He walked 5, allowing 2 runs. An ever-growing group of Pac-12 players say they will not play this fall if certain demands are not met by their schools and the conference, most of them about COVID-19 protection and social justice reform. Washington State appears to be unhappy with all of this. Multiple Cougars say head coach Nick Rolovich has hinted that they might not be welcome back if they're part of this group. WFAA in Dallas has audio of a conversation between head coach and his wideout Cassidy Woods that seems to confirm that. Woods isn't playing this fall because of COVID concerns. The school says no one has been cut, and anyone opting out this fall for health reasons will remain
on scholarship.
Does
that mean that Cassidy Woods recorded a conversation with his head coach without his coach knowing?
Yeah, but every state is different. Laws for that. Sometimes only one person needs to know, which is the person recording it, which obviously seems a little dastardly. And my assumption is, because I read the report, the article in the Dallas Morning News, that this is the way it's, you know, this is a legal recording because they wouldn't play it without it. And basically, audio is not great because I don't know how they recorded it. But Rolovich basically says, if you're staying home this year for COVID, that's fine, no concerns. But if you're attaching yourself to this movement, then that's a different story, and we'll have to address that down the road.
Huh. Well, I'm interested to see how that plays out. Wow, that's interesting. So this player recorded his conversation with his head coach. I mean, that boy, does that open up a can of worms if players started doing that? That's interesting.
Yeah. From the NFL, Eagles head coach Doug Peterson has COVID-19 but is not experiencing any symptoms at the moment. He'll work from home while assistant Deuce Staley is in charge at the facility. Brad Keselowski won NASCAR's race at Loudon, New Hampshire yesterday. Justin Thomas, a three-shot victory over Brooks Koepka at the St. Jude Invitational. And you'll have to wait for Canadian bacon to hear some hockey scores. DA, back to you.
This weekend on CBS, the best golfers of the world head west for the season's first major. Brooks Koepka takes home his third consecutive Wanamaker Trophy, or will somebody else step up to take their place in history? PGA Championship Live, starting Saturday, 4 Eastern, 2 Pacific, 1 Pacific, rather, on CBS. CBS Spectacular, yeah! When we come back, all the highlights fit to print as Mraz hosts the debut edition of Canadian Bacon, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the day that was. Next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save.
Crave the nightly action in Edmonton and Toronto of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's a hockey, you know, it's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
All right, every morning, Mraz is going to take us through the day that was the Stanley Cup playoffs. Our debut episode this morning. Mraz, take it away. Where do we start?
DA, let's go right to the game of the weekend in prime time. Saturday night, the Canadians, the Habs and the Have-Nots, taking on the heavily favored Penguins. Would the Canadians find a way to upset? Jeff Petrie had something to say about that.
Tried to hook the puck in front. It was blocked. In comes Petrie. He scores! Gets the goal, and the Montreal Canadiens have defeated the Penguins 3-2 and win the first game of the best of five.
That call courtesy of CBC Sports. Jeff Petrie off a blocked pass 14 minutes into overtime. That's right. Day one of the Stanley Cup qualifying playoffs. We had an overtime game at night. He scores underneath the arm of Matt Murray. The Canadiens take game one stunningly over the heavily favored Pittsburgh Penguins, forcing the Penguins basically in a must-win situation later on this evening. How nuts was game one, DA, we ask? How nuts?
How
the
nuts?
Game was tied at 2. The Penguins get a penalty shot with just over 3 minutes left in regulation. Carey Price makes the big save, so we went to overtime. The Canadians then, with Jeff Drouin, get a penalty shot in overtime. But the puck rolls off the stick. No good. This game, DA, was the first NHL postseason contest with 2 penalty shots since March 29th, 1923. Neither of those penalty shots went in. Unbelievable nugget, unbelievable stat. As I mentioned, game 2 a little bit later on. This Canadiens team, DA, so young compared to the experienced Penguins. In fact, the guy who scored the game-winning goal, Jeff Petrie, is the oldest Habs player along with goaltender Carey Price at just the age of 32.
So let me ask you, are the 2 penalty shots, were they legit calls? Have we seen sloppier play early in this leading to 2 PKs or penalty shots, rather?
As exciting as the games have been, there's definitely been some sloppy play. In fact, penalties were up across the board in all the games this weekend. It feels like there's a lot of hooking, a lot of tripping. They were both legit penalty shots, but a lot of players getting their footing. And you have to wonder, with the same games being played on the same ice, 3 games in a day, if some of this ice is getting a little more chippier even after the Zamboni's driving. But yes, there was a lot sloppier a play, a lot more funky, a lot more hooking, a lot more slashing. And both those penalty shots I thought were legit.
Okay, we continue. Where else do we go with Canadian bacon?
How about the the goal of the weekend. DA, we all missed the NCAA tournament. I think we all did, right? How do you not love the pageantry of the tournament? Buzzer beaters all over the place. So maybe the NBA fills our void with the buzzer beaters, maybe. But no, they did not this weekend. Instead, it was the NHL filling our void with a buzzer beater. That's right. Last night, Avalanche Blues in the round robin. Ooh. Both these teams will advance. How about Nazem Kadri avoiding overtime?
8 seconds left in the period. Landeskog has it. Back for Kale McCarr, holding McCarr. One-timer. Fake by McKinnon. Landeskog! Off the end! It's in! It's in! They score! Right in the horn! I think it's Nazem Kadri!
Connor McGahee, not Connor Green, of the Avalanche Radio Network. How about that 0.1 second on the clock, as Bogus alerted to earlier? If you do the math in Jock Alone's, that's a tenth of a second, DA. It went to review. It was confirmed. Sheet music. That's a Kadri goal on a buzzer beater for the Avalanche. The Stanley Cup champion Blues were absolutely stunned as they were in this round robin trying to get that top seed in the Western Conference. They can still breathe, though, as I mentioned. There's four of these games that are going to happen, or matchups, if you will, where we're playing round robin, and those teams are just playing for seeding. This happens to be one of those games. So luckily for the Blues, they can breathe a sigh of relief. But how about that? A tenth of a second on the clock, you get a buzzer beater? What a freaking start to the bubble, thanks to Kadri and the Avs.
That's pretty cool. So we have four teams atop the standings that are just playing for seeding, right? Four in the East, four in the West, playing for seeding. And then there's another eight below them that are playing an opening round right now that will feed into the quote-unquote first round of the playoffs, but we're really playing it. So the second round of the playoffs.
Right. We will get a 1-8 next round, but you will have that 1-4 in each conference decided with these round robins. Obviously, the Avs and Blues there. Later, we get Game 1 today of Stars and Golden Knights. Those are the four teams playing for that. We had the Bruins and Flyers yesterday play in the afternoon on NBC. Later on, we get Tampa Bay and the Capitals. So those are the four teams. So all those teams are just playing for seeding while everybody else is in best of five crazy series. And
okay,
DA,
very good. Yeah.
Yeah, one of those best of fives out in Edmonton. A wild situation, not with the Minnesota Wild, between the Flames and Jets. Johnny Gaudreau and Michael Backlund each scored power play goals to lead the Flames to a 4-1 win over the Jets on Saturday night. So there we go, a 1-0 series lead for Calgary. But the loss, you would think, would be the thing that upset head coach of the Jets, Paul Maurice, the most. Except, it wasn't. One of his stars, in fact, co-leading scorer this year, Mark Scheifele, was in the early in the first period skating against the boards when Flames star Keith Tkachuk came in awkwardly into the boards and lifted his leg just so that he sliced or came close to the back of the leg of Scheifele, leading Scheifele to hit the deck full hard like he had, you know, a gunshot to the back of the leg kind of situation, if you could picture it, if I could paint the picture. There was a lot of talk. Was this hit dirty? Was it not dirty? Here was Paul Maurice's thoughts after the game.
Oh, it was intentional. Kind of is a filthy, dirty kick to the back of the leg. You can't see it on the program feed, but take the blue line feed and you zoom in. He went after the back of his leg. Could have cut his Achilles. It could have ended the man's career. It's an absolutely filthy, disgusting hit.
Maurice did not hold back there, obviously calling it filthy and disgusting. He's clearly upset. Scheifele means everything to that Jets team. Now, like is protocol here in the new bubble situation, we don't have a timeline on the Scheifele injury. And we don't exactly have the exact injury either, because you're not supposed to give those kind of things out right now in this bubble COVID world we're living in. Here's my personal opinion. I think it was an awkward, hard hockey play. I really don't think it was awkward. I think he was lifting his foot just to kind of stop because they were going full speed against the boards. Tkachuk's reaction afterwards, as he sees Scheifele basically have to be carried off the ice, was that of concern. He came right over to him to see if he was okay. I think if the intent was dirty, I can't picture Tkachuk's reaction being that way, DA, but I can understand why Paul Maurice would feel that way. Look, in replay, when you see that skate come up and it comes up like a knife slice, that would scare the heck out of me. So I don't blame Maurice for sticking up for his guy. I just think it's a weird, awkward hockey play. I would not side on the side of dirty there.
Yeah, it's such a shame because Scheifele's at the boards. He's going into the boards. And then Tkachuk's skate, he's following him. And Tkachuk's skate goes up as he gets to the boards. And as it's up, it cuts into the back of his leg. And so it could look like it's dirty. And the thing is that Kachuk's kind of known as a pest, right? So people kind of doubt whether his intent is always pure. But it's hard to say that it looked intentional. It looked like it was just kind of a crazy thing that happened at a snap of the finger. So you don't think that Kachuk's reputation suggests that this definitely was dirty?
I don't think so. Just watching it over and over again, I don't think so. I think the cause for concern was there, DA, and that is day one of Canadian Bacon.
Canadian Bacon, that, by the way, was Matt Kachuk, right? That is the son of
Matt.
Keith Kachuk?
Yes, I have Keith Kachuk in my head for all those years, yes.
When we come back, could the Power Five split off from the NCAA for college football season?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.